Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Future Bytes. We are at the Hackensack Media Sponsor Stage 17 in New York City. And today we have a fantastic special guest, Winslow Porter, VR director and technologist and creator of one of the most amazing and compelling VR experiences that I have ever done so far, which is the tree. I saw it this morning, so it's really fresh. I have it still in my ears, in my eyes, and in my nose. But it plays into what I see being a big need and a powerful aspect of all this new technology, which is generate empathy, making sure that certain things that we talk about as important or not they are can resonate better if the delivery system is something that can really grab your senses and then turn you around like a sock, which is the way that I felt today. In brief, this experience tells the story of a tree. Do you want me to tell the story the way that I did, or would you like to from the beginning of when the idea came?
No, I think it'd be great for you to tell it because, you know, as storytellers, we're trying to create an experience where everyone pulls something. You know, they each have their own connection with nature or with technology, and so each person is the protagonist, is the camera person, is the director,
or a tree in this case.
Yeah, is a tree specifically. So everyone has their own feeling or connection. So yeah, I'm really curious to hear.
Okay. So this morning I was a tree for 10 minutes. I entered the RGA offices where you have a residency. And I entered a room that is a real installation. It's a high ceiling room with plants and dim lights, and it feels part of a garden. I was wearing my haptic vest, controllers, my visor, and headphones. I was asked beforehand to plant a seed in a vase just to give the symbolic start of the experience. And as the experience starts, I am a seed underground, and I start growing, peeking through the light, looking around. For the first time, I actually experienced 3D with an extrasensorial aspect, which was the smell. And me being a chef is actually something like, oh my gosh, for the first time, I am actually coordinating VR and my feelings with the smell around me. So I could smell the mushrooms and the moistiness of the dirt. The tree keeps on growing. My branches are full with leaves. I have parrots sitting on my arms. And it's just wonderful and incredibly poetic. Until the night comes, and finally I am a tree that has grown into a full-on scale tree. I am one of the big players in the forest. I have wind in my face. There's a big fan that is like pushing air in my face. So it's a wonderful big sky night. And all of a sudden, I smell burnt. I know that it was him. I know that it was his with the match. But I couldn't see him. So that played into my haptic vest vibrating into the headphones, delivering sound of crackling and disruption. All the birds fly out of this of the scene, and the scene is engulfed with fire. And I am not a tree anymore, or I become what is left of a tree. I grew up in Italy where deforestation for real estate, cattle, foraging purposes was the norm, especially south of Rome and some of the islands. So I did recognize what was happening, but I've always seen it from either the news or from far, far away. And it's very, very different when you are part of the scene. It gives you the goosebumps, but what is incredible is me as an adult thinking about how this message can truly change the perception or amplify the perception in the youngest generation. A generation that, for instance, a kid that grows in New York City, it's not easy to be in touch with the Amazonic forest. It is certain kind of realities are somewhat disconnected. We are hyper-connected. Everything is on our little screens and computers. But real life is very different. And there are moments in life in which being empathic and being connected with the world around you is useful. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how this experience came to be.
Sure. Well, I am a Brooklyn-based, creative technologist, creative director, who's been working in VR since 2014, originally as a producer. And that's sort of, my background is I would say, connecting people, being able to understand people who are, you know, designers, who are engineers, and sort of being able to help them, you know, putting all their talents together to create something sort of bigger than the sum of its parts. I also have a background in film and in music production. And so always been really interested. I like to joke that I was the, in my family at least, the one who knew how to change the time on the VCR, you know, yeah, as a kid growing up. And so after I graduated from film school, I was working as an editor in New York City at a place called Goldcrest, which is actually where I met Milica, who is also the co-director on
cool.
Tree.
Okay.
And we both saw, I was working with Lee Percy, mm-hmm, who was the editor on Single White Female and Boys Don't Cry. And, you know, he was a really amazing sort of force of nature when it came to his talent. But I also saw that he, you know, wanted to be a director. And I also saw that, you know, working, I learned a lot from being there, but I also wanted to tell my own stories. So I went back to grad school, a place called ITP,
okay,
which people say is the Center for the Recently Possible. And I learned about, you know, all these, basically, you know, the power of code, of starting things from scratch, of understanding how things
so
work.
So you're a coder as well?
No, coding makes me very sleepy.
Oh, okay.
You know, some people like go to bed, you know, they like to read a book before they go to bed. If I get too deep into the code, then it just, like, I'm much better at understanding things from a high level.
Okay.
I like to understand sort of the logic of things is how they happen. You know, there's so many different types of languages out there when it comes to being able to create things from technology. So having a higher level of understanding and understanding how different things can work together. And specifically in VR, every day, you know, there's people create rules and then the next day they're broken. And what's happening is really amazing because we're able to use a lot of cinema technology, mm-hmm, but in real time. And not just, you know, instead of rendering out each frame, we're actually able to move around and be, there is no more frame. We're dissolving the frame and we're able to be, as I said before, the protagonist, to be the camera person. And it feels a lot more real. And so I've taken all the skills that I've learned from previous jobs and, you know, sort of like trying to make things work and trying to break things as well. And with Tree, it's inspired by a 2004 sort of audio novella or like an audio play, I should mm-hmm. say, called Nightmare of a Tree by Alexander Prodich, who also did the sound design for the piece.
Okay.
In that piece, you basically witness over the period, a little over 10 minutes, you witness the life of a tree, but just from audio perspective. In that, it doesn't end the same way. In this, you get cut down, and then that's how you get milled into paper. And then you are at an office, you hear the sounds.
You know, it's interesting because when I knew, you know, my fantastic producer was able to lock you in for the interview, I started doing some research and I went online on YouTube where you can see the 2D version of this, of your installation, of your experience. And I did not want to see the end because yep. I knew that I was going to see you and I wanted to experience firsthand, but I was expecting to be cut
yep.
the way that I told you this morning. Maybe because it could have been a little bit more dramatic given that you have a visor and all of a sudden you're very, very high. So ideally a fall is something that you retain easy. But I have to say, associating the burnt smell mm-hmm. and the stillness of the forest after the fire passes through, it was as powerful as falling down.
Well, yeah, I mean, so there's also, you know, a lot of user experience issues right now with what you can or what you know, best practices for what you should and shouldn't do with the viewer. And a lot of people who haven't experienced VR before, it's already a pretty harrowing,
them, yeah.
like just to be able to grow 100 feet tall.
And, we're also staying balanced.
Exactly.
Yes.
We play with your sense of scale. So if you move an inch in the VR headset, you actually move a foot in the virtual world because it makes you feel like you're taller. Because we're actually growing your character.
Absolutely.
It's not like you're just going up in an elevator.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so with that too, like if we were to cut people down, I would say that, you know, probably a quarter of the people who experience it think that they're going to get cut down.
Yeah.
But then there's also something, you know, there's, again, you said, you're mentioning sort of a, you know, we like to sort of take poetic license and, you know, as you, in the experience, a little bit of a spoiler here, but we encourage you to see Tree as well. It's very different than describing it or seeing, you know, a 2D version bit by actually, you know, being in there first person. But, you know, after you see the fire come towards you, we wanted to make it feel like, you know, like the soul of the tree has left.
Yeah.
And that, you know, also the sense of, you know, what can people do? The other thing with a lot of, you know, headlines and newspapers is people feel helpless. you know, they have this, the only connection they have is through like a, you know, a story that, that sort of gets put into one part of their mind, but it doesn't get encapsulated as a memory. And with Tree, we really wanted to make it feel like it was happening to you. And you know,
to a degree, when I look at this technology in action, I almost want to go back to school. You know, like there are, you go on social media and here and there, you know, that dumb picture comes out. It's like, you take the blue pill, you get $10 million. You get the red pill, you go back 20 years. Which one would you like to do? I've always wanted to go back just to live as a youngster. You know, even if I am a very analog kind of person, I grew up in the country. So for me, like touching and feeling an eye-to-eye experience. But when I was in school, in my learning curve, in my learning process, in finding myself in the things that I wanted to do in life, it has been a much longer process because in the school system, I really did not find the things that resonated with me. I found things that I liked, but nothing that really stuck to me or hit me as a brick. And when I look at this technology, think about studying medicine and studying the human body. Or think about just a simple student in junior high school that is learning about deforestation. What is it? How is it done? How is it implemented? And how could you feel a little closer to these things that are, you know, you might be an urban kid, but your air depends on trees that are all around this planet and water bodies all around this planet.
Yeah. And it's kind of shocking, though, because, you know, in, 100 years, and I think it's actually 90 years now, NASA said that there won't be any more rainforest. So it's kind of, it's an interesting situation, almost a paradox where, in the future, the closest we can get to nature might only be through technology.
Yeah.
If we're not doing something, and that's why we're trying to, you know, have a call to action.
You know, it's funny because this is you really hit the nail on the head in terms of why I'm doing this. When I arrived in the U.S., when I started my show, I leveraged the heritage of my great grandparents and my grandparents in a world that was antique, old, in black and white. It was the shovel, the dirt under your nails, the recipes and the stories told around the fireplace. And via TV, I was able to convey that story. And now I'm realizing that the people that I told those stories about 10 years ago are getting older. And a new generation that I would love to talk to are not connected with a world like that. They've never seen it. They were born with what we call smartphones. They're calling them phones. It used to be the phone. For us, it became the smartphone. Now it's just a phone again. So the idea for me to be able to keep on telling the stories and preserving my heritage and my identity and historical heritage all over the world is in desperate need of technology like this, because there is no way. I mean, it would be really hard to create, but kids need to know how the Holocaust happened. And certain moments in history that are irrefutable or undeniable. And books and people talking are not enough anymore. You need to be there. You need to see and live, because now we can. So let me ask you, given that this experience of yours was so powerful, what's next? Are you already thinking about it?
That's a great question. So we created... we created Tree as the second part of a trilogy. Giant is part one, where we sort of want people to experience the harm that humans do to each other.
You were at Tribeca Film Festival with that, right?
We were at Sundance. We premiered that at Sundance. But we were at Tribeca with Tree and Sundance as well. But where we witness what it's like to be in a basement with a family during their last moments, and it's called Giant because they're trying to convince their young 6-year-old daughter that the approaching bomb blast is, in fact, a friendly giant that wants to play with her. Another spoiler alert. Unfortunately, it doesn't end well for the family. The ceiling collapses, and we're left with sort of this uncertainty. And then Tree, we want to analyze and explore the harm that humans are doing to the planet, where we witness the full life cycle of a tree. And with Breathe, which is the third part of our trilogy, which we're working on right now with RGA and a bunch of our other partners from the previous projects, where we witness the life cycle of the girl who survives in Breathe.
Oh.
This sort of faceless conflict, because we also find that the less, you know, people are very creative, and the more room you give them to explore their imagination, the more the piece becomes personal.
Yes.
And you were talking before, you know, about empathy. And it's really important, you know, VR can be an empathy machine. I think that we shouldn't just think of it as, you know, plug and play empathy machine. It really, you have to consider the
because
user.
That takes away from your humanity.
Exactly.
Empathy is within you.
Yes.
That is just helping to, you know, blow on the flame and make sure that, you know, it sparks again.
Exactly. But so we want to be able to connect you with this person. And so it's called Breathe because in the beginning of the experience, we bring the user through different breathing exercises. And through that, we then realize the sounds become more clear, our vision becomes more focused and sharp, and we see that we're trapped underneath the rubble. But we're using breath, we bring ourselves back to life. And then we get rescued from being there, and we're sort of the poster child of this conflict.
Okay.
And then we follow this girl throughout key moments in her life using breath as a way to interact, because that's something that we all do, you know, either consciously or subconsciously. That will help you better enable this, but from a first person perspective. So basically, as you circumnavigate around a column in the center of the room, every time you do a revolution, you become 12 years older. So basically, through movement and breathing, you age.
Okay.
And you experience, you know, key moments in her life using breath as a way to interact until you're 90 years old, until her final breath.
Yeah.
And then you exhale basically your body as particles, which then form a nebula, which
ashes
forms
to ashes.
A galaxy. Exactly.
That is incredible.
And I think that Americans in general have a problem with facing death.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, our pieces maybe some people consider to be slightly morbid or have a, you know, but I think that, you know, with death is also life. And we need become a lot more comfortable with that. So in this piece, when it ends, we want people to feel very happy and lucky to be alive.
I am very looking forward to see how this technology will impact storytelling and life in the kitchen, because even if that is a lighter subject, so there are issues that I would love to tackle, like, you know, poverty or, you know, disadvantaged families that do not have access to good food. And it's interesting because I'm happy that you were here actually in the studio when I closed my recording with Margaret Purvis, who's the CEO of the New York City Food Bank. There are so many social issues that could be tackled with this technology. But the first thing that always comes to mind is which can be the impediments. And as we did the experience, I noticed that, you know, yes, I was wearing high-end tech devices, but there was also a very practical and manual and analog component, which was I had a fan that was blowing in my face, probably a heat radiator, because I felt the heat from the fire.
Heat, yeah. Some people think it's in their head.
Yeah, but you were the one operating all that.
Yes.
Well, lighting the match, mm-hmm. and moving under my nose to make me smell the fire. So as you build these kind of experiences, where do you find the biggest challenges in achieving the sensorial experience that you're trying to build?
Well, I would say, you know, in any good storytelling, it's kind of like, you know, magic in a sense. You want to be able to transport someone somewhere, and, you know, virtual reality is not new. You know, being able to tell a poem where you can imagine something that's taking you to a place, that in my mind is also VR. So it's the same stories, but now we have new tools to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the biggest challenge is, you know, how do we make this feel natural? And because a lot of people haven't done VR before too, we want to make it feel organic. These innate interactions, how we normally deal with life, those are the things we want to pull upon. And that's why breathing for a breathe is very important, because we do it, but we oftentimes don't consider it or we don't acknowledge it.
It's a given, right?
It's a given.
Breathing.
But those are the moments. And like, how in 10 minutes can we make something feel personal? And so those are the things we want to, you know, sort of like bring to the forefront the normal, the things that you take for granted every day. You know, the idea of being alive, of family, of sensations. And you were talking about the wind and the smells, and, you know, right now the headsets are like, you know, 2K or they're going to be 3K as far as the resolution of the pixels. But, you know, scent is super HD. Wind is beyond HD, because that's how we experience it anyway.
Exactly.
There's no resolution of that. These are the senses that we grew up with. And so the more that we can pull from things that we're used to doing, and that we don't have to learn a new way of interacting with it, the more natural things can be, the more compelling the stories can be, the more that these, you know, if you're going to walk 1,000 feet in somebody else's shoes, if those aren't your shoes, that can feel weird. So how do we make it so that those are your shoes, that is your body, that is your narrative?
What is the future iteration for projects like this, like a dedicated space with automatic sensors or machines that are spraying?
Exactly. Or no, I mean, so that's the plan, is making it so that everyone gets, you know, something similar, but also we have an automated box that we use as well when we have longer installations. But yeah, I mean, it's really the culture sort of needs to catch up, because the technology, you know, I like to use the example of watching, you know, when I was a kid watching Apocalypse Now on my friend's brother's like 12-inch VHS TV combo.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that was one of my favorite movies. You know, there were scan lines being played, so the resolution didn't matter. It was the story that yeah. was most important. So I think that we're still caught up too much on the technology and not on how we're using it, and not the stories that we're telling. So it's really important to consider the user. The user, again, we keep saying that, but you know, the participant, we should yeah. say.
This is actually one of my biggest points when I talk to people and I try to explain VR. I think that the perception is arcade tools.
Exactly. So we're blowing people's heads off.
Yeah, exactly. You know, which is what I look when I receive my Oculus Go. Forget the rash, because I'm allergic to the silicone in the material, which is incredibly weird. But first thing that I did was shooting zombies. Yep. The second thing that I did was roller coaster. Then I went trying to fly. Now, when I can bear like the itch, the only thing that I'm doing is read documentaries.
Yeah.
Like I really have discovered that the powerful aspect of this is just diving into a whole new world and not necessarily shoot everything around you, because that yeah. can be fun, but try to understand. Well, try to exactly what you said, you know, be in somebody else's shoes and just breathe it in and learn.
Yeah.
Which is something that it's hard these days, learning good things or getting inspired, but good subjects or, you know, even metaphors like the one of the tree. Could be a forest, could be you, could be the world you live in, you know, it can be your place in society.
Definitely. And with that too, I think it takes just a little bit of extra, you know, effort on the viewer. Instead of, you know, these are the things that you're talking about are the things that we know work in video games. We know work on, you know, on tablets, on home consoles, in certain movies.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, imploring the audience, asking them to try something a little different and exploring this new medium, which is, you know, it is film, it is video games, it is interactive theater, it is immersive installations, but it's also something totally new. And then by, you know, each experience, whether it's good or bad, we learn something about what is possible it's with this
true.
New platform.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm trying to think about what kind of subjects I could tackle if I wanted to, you know, drive this kind of content in my main element, which is the kitchen. And I was thinking about it the other day, and the first thing that came was how meat gets to your table. That to me is a horror documentary.
There is one called it's by Dam Funk Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Condition One. It's okay. about they went into a slaughterhouse in Mexico, in Mexico City, and it's pretty. I mean, it's one of those things where you see everything. And
right.
I didn't eat pork for a month, but after that, I was sort of like, oh, you know, like why am I not eating pork again? And I kind of forgot. But
yeah.
It did impact me, and sometimes, you know, these documentaries will also do the same, but it impacted me in a different way because I felt like I was there. And then also with VR, we're categorizing memories differently, or how we perceive information. So it's actually stored in a different part of the brain than when we watch TV, which is a more fleeting passive experience.
More passive, yes.
So yeah, we're actually acknowledging these things as memories.
That's also why I like it from the education perspective, because your retention is so much higher because you're living it in first person. So it becomes a memory rather than something that you read. It's like you read a book, you know, what I love about reading a book on paper, black and white, is that you build the world in your head.
Yeah.
Then one day you go to the movies and they destroy it for
Just
you.
Just totally destroy it.
Absolutely. VR is almost like that cross, because you're still there. You still do have the capacity to have a certain kind of interaction with the world around you. But the comprehension of the moment, the analysis, and ultimately the results is on you. So you have to elaborate, and that's what I think is, you know, the what's incredible. Let me ask you, if you were to do something about the kitchen, what would you do?
That's a really good question as well, because we've been sort of consulting, or we've been talking with a lot of people in, you know, who are chefs or who work with food production, because, you know, taste is such an incredible sense, because a lot of it is actually smell as huh. well. For us, thinking about, you know, your perception, you know, we rely on our sight so much as far as how we think things look. And that's why, you know, food posts and Instagram are so, you know,
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you probably know firsthand.
It triggers a smell sense even if you're not there.
Exactly.
You know, it makes you salivate even if you have no idea.
And it's how we also imprint memories through taste and smell, and those can be the most profound. That can, you know, remind you of being in the kitchen with your grandmother when you're 8 years old.
Bring you back 20 years in a second.
Just like that soil smell, you know, when you're underground. Like it reminds me of, like, of planting, you know, in my
it's
grandmother's
like doing
backyard.
Garden. Yeah.
And so being able to, I think, be able to have the trigger of memories and creating new memories and how we can sort of reappropriate our understanding of food through perception. If we can now actually do it so we can track a plate mm-hmm. in virtual space, or we can track a glass. Actually, one of our interns, Huayi, did an experience where you can track a glass.
Okay.
And it's amazing when you can actually drink from it. And it's a totally different experience because you're used to this, and now this could be anything. You could put any color fluid you want in there. You could have it be shimmering. You could have it seem like it's on fire.
That is actually a barrier that I have to break in my own head, because the idea of being spoon-fed, wearing a visor, it's something that I'm just quite not there yet.
I would
like to do, like, you know, a little bit of that and a little bit of a eye-to-eye.
One thing we learned too, and you know this doesn't always come off in the right way, is that people don't like to put things in their mouth that they can't see.
Yeah.
And that is just the reality of it.
Which is, you know, one of the first jokes that obviously came out when people started, you know, developing devices to make you smell. The smell on the internet.
Yes.
The idea that you can trick people into it. But if you design an experience, putting in touch, you know, the wine with the winery, the animal with the grass that he ate, you know, the way with the fields where it was harvested, the bread and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you can really enhance it. And I'm curious. Yeah. I think someone even did a study where we can make things taste better, because a lot of it, you know, it's how we're perceiving the information. So, you know, we can make things taste better, but VR is still such in an early stage. It's in its infancy that, you know, I think also we're going to make things taste worse.
Well, I actually am an incredibly firm believer of that, and that is the reason why I closed my restaurant, because I do believe that my food tasted at best when the story comes with it.
Yeah.
So it is not just about the execution and feeding you if you're hungry. It is about everything that comes with that dish. So I am not a big fan of, you know, well-executed plating. Yes, clean and healthy and fresh, absolutely. But, you know, grandma didn't use tweezers. I like, you know, it's food.
Yeah, no, yeah. And it's you know, there's a sort of an aspect of time, you know, like food is very temporary.
Absolutely.
It's us appreciating these little moments. And I think that's something that, you know, like it's never the same either. And that's something that is interesting to explore inside a storytelling environment too. So I'm curious as to what you would also do if you were to do VR and food.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out as I'm talking to you. No, I am incredibly fascinated. You know, I would say that possibly my first approach would be how certain kind of ingredients are getting to your mouth. So what would be the path of a grape bottled and becoming, you know, your wine, or wheat becoming your bread? Eventually, maybe an animal becoming something, mm-hmm. but then you would lose your appetite.
Yeah.
As you get to the completion of it. So, you know, maybe fishing is different. You have that, you know, a little less attachment. But you know what? I'll bring you up for a beer and we'll talk more about
it. That sounds great.
That sounds, especially because we're both from Brooklyn. Winslow, this was a fantastic interview.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I could talk to you for hours. This is Future Bites. We're talking about what's going to happen in the future, but clearly not just in the kitchen. This is more about the storytelling and how you can imagine the future for yourself. And it's a constant discovery, and I'm super, super excited. So, Winslow, thank you so much.
Thanks
again.
For having me.
And download the podcast on the OG Podcast Network or iTunes or Google Play. And in a week from now, find this video on YouTube as well. Be well. Ciao. Yeah.